So good afternoon, everybody. Thank you very much for having me. So from politics, we move back to ADME research, and we will concentrate a little bit on tissue distribution. We have a long-standing interest in tissue distribution, and the rationale for this was highlighted a long time ago by Paul Ehrlich, who said that for a drug to become active, it simply has to reach its target site, which is pretty simple. Now, if you're working in the field of tissue distribution, you will encounter a number of, I would like to call them, misconceptions. And one of the first misconception or assumption you encounter here is that blood target site equilibrium can simply be taken for granted. I used to refer to this as the simple bathtub assumption, because people think that mere and instantaneous diffusion will take care of everything. Now, there are a number of arguments against this assumption. One argument is the presence of active transporters, most notably in the brain. But if you knock out an active transporters and you study tissue concentrations of various drugs, you will find that obviously transporters play some, or in some cases even a critical role in the distribution, because you can here see if you knock out the transporter, the cyclosporin A concentration increase fourfold in muscle, for instance. So it's most pronounced in the brain, but it's also there in other organs. So if you now divide the different mechanisms for impaired drug distribution, you will see there are mechanisms that lead to a lack of equilibrium even at steady that will lead to an equilibrium at steady state at some point in time, which usually has something to do with effects of capillary density and blood flow. So take some time, and there's not an instantaneous equilibration. And then you have situations where you get an inequilibrium even at steady state, which might be due to active transporters, but also due to other mechanisms like pH partition, Gibbs Donnan in equilibria, and so forth. Now, until very recently, there was also the idea that it's very difficult to measure tissue distribution, except for the fact that you cut out small pieces of tissue, like in this case, so one point in time measurements. So those tissues were then homogenized, and the concentration in there was referred to as the so-called tissue concentration, also for regulatory purposes. And I used to call this like ticking the regulatory box, so we did this. I would doubt that this is very meaningful. So the entire concept comes from this idea of the Nernst partition coefficient, so that you get something like a partition coefficient between plasma and tissue after some time. And the assumption here is the tissue is a homogeneous matrix, which, as you know, is probably not the case, because you've got a number of sub-compartments here in the tissue, cells, interstitial space, and so forth. So if you look this topic up in regulatory guidance documents, you will see that most of the relevant agencies demand distribution studies. There are a number of guidance papers out there. One, for instance, here, when it comes to the famous critical path document. So the FDA has an interest in viewing drugs and their actions directly at the level of the drug target rather than indirectly via plasma concentration. So modeling from plasma concentrations several so-called peripheral compartments, whatever that might be. Now, if you look up this document about innovation and stagnation, you will find this word toolbox. And this is all we have been talking about, so novel tools in drug development. And one tool I would like to show you today is called microdialysis. So microdialysis is a probe technology where a little probe is inserted via a guide cannula into a tissue of interest. And the principle is as follows. So you can here see this little cannula, or the microdialysis probe. And this is the microdialysis probe. This is the skin surface is now inserted in the tissue of interest. And this is perfused by means of a bump with a so-called perfusate at a very low flow rate, 1 to 5 microliter per minute. The perfusate is bumped to the tip of the probe, and here at the tip you find a semi-permeable membrane, which allows diffusion of diffusible compounds out of the interstitium into the perfusate, which is then called dialysate. So the analyte-enriched perfusate is the dialysate, which then is pumped out of the tissue and subjected to chemical analysis whatsoever. So this tool, this little catheter, allows you to measure interstitial concentration, unbound, so pharmacologically active concentration in various organs. You need to do a little bit of calibration here because the equilibrium here is not 100%, but I will leave that here because it's a little bit technical. So if you look the tool up in PubMed or so, you will find there's a lot of experience. So there are almost 12,000 publications now on the application of microdialysis in various settings. And I think 1 or 2 years last year, we wrote a paper together with people from the FDA on regulatory perspectives of this technology and how you could apply it. So it has been published in the Journal of Clinical Pharmacology, if you're interested in that. Microdialysis has been around for some time already, mostly for purposes of studying brain chemistry in rodents. But it has also been used to identify lead compounds, most notably lead compounds in CNS drug development, so you could study which drug makes it across the blood-brain barrier, so in the interstitium of the brain. 5 to 6 years ago, FDA and CE-approved probes became available, also for use on humans, and this is just to show you some potential settings. So I usually say it can be employed in every given organ, so this is an example of brain microdialysis procedure in a patient with a cerebral hemorrhage. We can see the microdialysis probe here implanted via a borehole together with the brain pressure catheter, and this is in a case of lung surgery where during the operation a very long microdialysis probe, so almost 1 meter in length, is inserted into the lung parenchyma. This can then stay in place for a couple of days and you can measure drugs, but also other analytes like metabolites and so forth, mediators. I will now just try to give you some feeling for the technique and how this can be employed. A lot of work has been done in merely monitoring tissue chemistry, and this is an interesting piece of work where microdialysis catheters have been implanted in 10 patients with suffering from epilepsy who were conscious into the amygdala, and those patients had to perform cognitive tasks. And during the performance of cognitive tasks, you can see that here you got a surge in dopamine levels. And from this, people inferred that obviously dopamine has something to do with cognition. In this case, another interesting paper here has come out this year on beta amyloid concentrations in human brain, in interstitium of the human brain. So a piece of Alzheimer research, and due to the development of microdialysis probes, it's now also possible to study small proteins. So the cutoff of those tiny dialysis holes, so the pore size has come up to 100 kilodalton. So as a rule of thumb, you can study analytes up to a size of approximately 5 kilodalton as of today. We have been mostly interested in drug research, and here most notably in the study of anti-infective agents, because the interstitial space is the space where bacteria are living, and this is the actual target site. And if you administer antibiotics, like in this case, you will see that for highly protein-bound drugs like this drug here, cefixime, you will see that there is a gap in here between plasma concentrations and tissue concentrations. So what you here see is just the effect of protein binding. So high protein binding impedes drug penetration into the interstitium, whereas here for a drug which is relatively lowly bound to proteins, you see that the gap is smaller. So for in healthy subjects, the situation is almost always like this, that by measuring the unbound tissue concentration or the unbound plasma concentration, you can predict the tissue concentration, but it's a little bit different in patients. Like here, for instance, in ICU patients, where you can here see that as compared to healthy control subjects, muscle concentration or peripheral target concentrations are much lower as compared to the control. So there is some penetration barrier, which might have something to do with the application of vasoconstrictors and so forth. This is another example where, again, can see the equilibration. So one would mean that there's a total equilibration between plasma and tissue. This is the curve for healthy volunteers, also for an antibiotic. You can here see that there's a relatively instant and complete equilibration between plasma and tissues in healthy volunteers. This is the curve in septic patients. So you see that it takes some time until you get the concentration or the full plasma concentration in the tissue, and this might be meaningful if the drug should act rapidly. To this point, I've just shown you concentrations, which might not be meaningful in themselves. So what is probably more rewarding is if you relate pharmacokinetics to pharmacodynamics. And what we have done extensively is we have measured tissue concentration, so entire time concentration profiles in various organs. Here you can see a case of a diabetic foot syndrome. So we measured tissue concentrations here in the inflamed lesion. And then we mimicked this very time concentration profile in cell culture and measured the effect on bacterial killing. You can here see the curve. So this is the pharmacokinetic part. Here you can see plasma concentration curves for individual patients. Here you see muscle concentrations, and here you see the kill curve, so the pharmacodynamic part on a strain here, Pseudomonas aeruginosa. And what you can here see, if you take plasma levels also in drug development, you might be a little bit misled, because just by applying plasma values, you would get the impression that you get a total kill off of your bacteria. Whereas if you simulate the situation with peripheral or muscle concentration, in this case, you will see that you have a high variability here, also in the pharmacodynamic effect, which might be explained by the variability in tissue concentration. So the lower the tissue concentration, the less pronounced the killing effect. So this is the control curve here. So plasma concentration might be okay, although tissue concentration are not. And then you can go on and play around, and this has some meaning now in drug development in the anti-infective arena, where you can feed a computer with these two time concentration profiles. And you can ask the computer, okay, what would a kill curve look like if you would apply, and if you pay attention, this, and this is the same total daily dose. So this is 250 milligram four times a day, this is 500 milligrams two times a day, immediate release tablet and modified release tablet. And what you can see here is that just by changing the formulation and working with tissue levels, you get a better kill curve here for the 250 four times a day as opposed to the 500 milligram immediate release two times a day. So this is a probably somewhat meaningful approach in coming up with the right dose. Similar work has been done in tumors. So this is work where concentrations were measured in tumors, and you can here see, so those were the non-responders, those were the responders, that also by using pharmacokinetic concepts you could explain in some cases why tumors become drug resistant. This is also work from our group in breast cancer patients, where you can also see that there's a tendency of low tumor levels, and so these open squares here mean that those patients were non-responders to chemotherapy, and there was some correlation between low doses at the target site in the tumor and lack of responsiveness. And also here it is interesting to see that those patients had relatively high plasma concentrations. Also here you can clean the same concept and go to the lab and expose, in this case, cancer cells to these time concentration profiles. You measure in vivo, in your in vivo setting, and you can here see that for 5-fluorouracil, pharmacokinetics explains pharmacodynamics. So the higher the concentration at the target site in the biophase surrounding the cells, the more pronounced your kill effect on cancer cells. Whereas for this drug, MTX, there is no such correlation. So here, even though you have relatively high concentrations, you see that there is virtually no effect of AUC differences on pharmacodynamics. So you learn a lot about dosing of different drugs, and you learn about rate-limiting steps. So like here for 5-FU, obviously tissue penetration or penetration into the tumor is a rate-limiting step, also in response to the therapy. Whereas for MTX, there are some other events, yeah, like intracellular resistance, whatever that might be, but obviously it's not the mere drug load at the target site that drives your response. Another interesting field is transdermal research, because up until recently there was no tool available to measure target site concentrations in tissues underneath the application of a topical formulation, like a cream, gel, ointment, or what have you. And here you can see the effects of various interventions on topical penetration of salicylic acid. So skin concentrations of salicylic acid were measured online here by microdialysis, so probes that were inserted underneath the application side of this topical. And what you can here see is that for unmodified skin, the curve looks like this. Yeah? And if you tape strip the skin, yeah, so very coarse intervention, you get a 1, 2, 3, 4 log fold increase in topical concentrations. Yeah? And then you also can play around and study the effect of vasoconstrictors and penetration enhancers on a topical formulation. The big issue now is dermal bioequivalence. I don't know if you know Vinod Shah from the FDA. He has come up with a document, a guidance document on topical bioequivalence, and microdialysis is now one of the tools that is encouraged by FDA for doing dermatopharmacokinetic evaluations. So what are the future concepts of this tool in drug development? So one important issue will become biomarkers in tissues, so proteins, mediators like Alzheimer proteins, as I've shown you. It will be the issue of topical bioequivalence, like in the case of anti-infectives and anti-cancer drugs. It will help in coming up with an optimal dose. It is a tool, yeah, that could have a place in the whole concept of the critical path idea, and it has already since, I would say, 10-15 years been employed as a tool in preclinical screening of CNS drugs. Now, so far so good. There is one important question you have to ask yourselves if you are dealing with tissue measurements, and the question is, where actually is your drug? Yeah, or where should your drug be? And I used to tell a joke. Yeah? The joke goes like follows. There's a man, it's night, a man is standing under a street lantern and is looking for something. And another man comes along and says, okay, what are you doing here? He says, I've lost my keys. Yeah, so this is why this is here, where are my keys? I've lost my keys. And they say, okay, I'm going to help you. And the two of them are standing now under the street lantern and are looking for the keys. After 10 minutes, the other guy asks him, so we've now been looking for such a long time, where have you lost your keys? And he says, oh, you know, 10 blocks down the road. Yeah. And then he asks him, well, why are we looking here? Because we've got light here, is the answer. Yeah. And I think this is a relatively typical situation. Namely, we do things because it's obvious and because it's easy to do, but it might not be necessarily prudent. Yeah. So, this is why I'm showing you another tool, yeah, which you might think of when it comes to tissue distribution. Like for anti-infectives, most of the bacteria are living in the interstitial space. This is the key situation for microdialysis, because microdialysis measures here in the biophase. So for every drug that acts via a surface receptor or for a pathogen in the interstitial space, microdialysis is a great tool. If you have an intracellular event, like for many anti-cancer drugs, or also for here intracellular pathogens, interstitial concentrations do not count. Yeah? So you get misleading numbers. And so we have been working with positron emission tomography now for quite some years, so in clinical but also small animal research. I think you know the principle. The principle is that you administer a positron emitting radio nuclide, yeah, which then collides with an electron and gives rise to two gamma rays, and you get a very precise signal. And this is how it looks like in pharmacokinetic research. So here we have studied the distribution of 18F ciprofloxacin in healthy volunteers, and you can here see the distribution into the liver. So this is the gut. So obviously, after 45 minutes of drug administration, IV, as you can see here, you get a very pronounced staining of the excretory organs, and lung concentration and muscle concentrations are relatively low. And as microdialysis, this allows you to draw in contrast to those bioptic techniques, which just allow you to measure in one time point, you get those nice time concentration profiles, and you can then study concentrations in the brain and defined organs. The downside is that, again, PET imaging only gives you an average number for the tissue, so you usually don't know where your drug is. And for this, we have tried to combine imaging and microdialysis, which allows you to model intracellular concentration, so you would then get information about three different compartments, namely interstitial, intracellular, and whole tissue compartments. And by employing those tools, you get a very good handle on what is happening with your drugs in various settings and various organs. So what is the conclusion? So clinical microdialysis is now around for almost 15 years. So there's a lot of data, so it's a safe, reproducible, and ethically acceptable tool. It is well established. It can be done in most organs. So there are studies on, like I showed you, brain, myocardium, lung, and so forth. There are a number of regulatory documents where you will find microdialysis, and there are many cases now where microdialysis has been employed as a tool and where it has really affected decision-making, most notably in dosing questions in drug research. And with that, I'm at the end of my talk, and I thank you for your attention.